Death on the air. We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dead on the air. We're back, we're dead on the air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air. This is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and this is the last day of winter, and we've got a spanking day in Sydney today, a beautiful 24 degrees, blue skies, and as we lead into Father's Day. And speaking of Father's Day, in the studio I have with me this morning, Phil York from Dads in Distress.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, everyone.
And so happy Father's Day to you, Phil, for Sunday.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Thank you very much. Let's hope it's a great day for fathers. And on the show today, we will be speaking a little bit later with Warwick Marsh, who's going to talk to us about Father's Day. Warwick's a regular on the show, and he is the principal of the Fatherhood Foundation. So it'll be interesting to talk to Warwick. Before that, we'll be speaking with Barry Williams, who's the national president of the Lone Fathers Association. And Barry's going to be talking to us about these four points of discrimination that he's going to be raising with the Sex Discrimination Commissioner, Elizabeth Broderick. And we will also be speaking to Stephen Holden. Stephen has a new blog site called The Other Glass Ceiling, which is an interesting take on the glass ceilings that we're used to hearing about with women, but there's another glass ceiling that seems to be appearing for men, so we'll be talking to Stephen about that. So it's a packed show today. And before we get on with our interviews, there have been a number of items in the news post-election. I suppose that's the first thing to make note of, is that we still don't know who's going to be our Prime Minister. We're still in caretaker mode. But one of the things that we can expect the new government to consider when eventually it takes power is the potential for changes in the family law. You might recall, we've reported on this before, that there were six separate reports delivered in recent months from various research bodies, such as the Australian Institute of Family Studies. There was the retired family court judge Richard Chisholm produced a report, the Family Law Council of Australia, and several others. And these reports in total cost the government something like $7 million. And they're all with the they went to the Labor Attorney General Robert McClelland, and following with the election coming, there didn't seem to be any action forthcoming. But now that the election's out of the way, it's something we perhaps have to brace for, that there may be changes coming in the shared parenting reforms that were introduced by the Howard government back in 2006. Unfortunately, there seems to be some support growing for the changes to model themselves along the reports of perhaps Professor Chisholm and some others who are focusing on the violence and the minority failings in the shared parenting regime. I think we all have to focus now on maintaining those reforms that were introduced by John Howard, and perhaps even going a lot further, so that the ideal situation, as we've seen a number of American states, is that there is that presumption of equal shared time, and then it's up to proving that there's some reason why there shouldn't be equal shared time, rather than the way it is at the moment, or the way it has been anyway, that there is a presumption that there will not be equal shared parenting. So that's something to look out for as the new government, when it does assume power, and one of the things that may be on its agenda. There's also been some articles in the paper regarding the Ombudsman's report. There was an article here on August 26th by Paul Bibby in a journal called Workplace. And this reports on the finding by Acting Ombudsman Ron Brent into the Child Support Agency. And his overall conclusion was that the Child Support Agency had at times been unduly influenced by stereotypes about fathers not meeting their obligations. He found the agency had not been even-handed in its role as an investigator, and even then you might say there's a fault that hits you right in the eye. How can the agency be both the investigator, the regulator, the enforcer, the determiner? It seems to have a number of conflicting roles there. but in their role as an investigator, they have unduly investigated fathers and made who are normally the ones making the payments, and made them the subject of rigorous investigations, including checking on their any property holdings, tax minimisation arrangements, involvement in complex corporate structures. And at times these investigations were both intrusive and insensitive. In some cases, they even checked the financial records of a father's new partner to see what they could make of that. And at the same time as all this was going on, there were very few investigations into those who received payments, usually the mothers, to see whether they were getting too much. Mr. Brent said the CSA needs to change its case selection procedures to be more even-handed in its approach to the two parties. It is also important that investigations are carried out with sensitivity and without implying that all investigated parents are trying to avoid child support obligations. He came up with a number of recommendations. His recommendations included that adequate information is provided to parents about the investigation process itself, what information is required and what factors are taken into account. A recommendation that the accuracy of the CSA's decisions, and that they are based on complete information rather than the oftentimes inaccurate findings, which then have to be challenged and go through the whole process, finish up in the Federal Magistrates Court on occasions, or the SSAT. He recommended that training and support be provided for the CSA's investigation officers, and that this be of a high standard, and that quality assurance, data collection, record keeping and procedural matters are appropriately rigorous. The CSA, meanwhile, has said that they will comply with these recommendations, so it remains to be seen how strictly they follow. And, of course, there is the usual objection from the National Council for Single Mothers and Their Children, where Elizabeth McInnes, who is a well-known policy advisor, said she did not believe the Child Support Agency applied a gender filter to its investigations. Dr. McInnes said, "I think the filter is the law." And unfortunately, that is a problem, because oftentimes CSA will take actions and when queried will simply say it is the law without ever being able to quote a section or a precedent or a legal precedent or anything to back up that statement. So I think Elizabeth McInnes' statement that it's the filter is the law is not particularly helpful. Now, Phil, you had something on this as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Bill, it's obvious from my position with talking to so many non-custodial parents, mainly dads, in regards to these investigations. Very often I have fathers come to me and say, you know, they've investigated me, fair enough, but I can tell you, Phil, that my ex-partner is working and et cetera, and it's not going on to the books. She's still receiving family payment from Centrelink, and she's underestimating her income to the child support agency. So I say to these guys, well, you know, fair's fair. It's supposed to be a fair system. Child support say that it is a fairer system. Take it back to them. And time again, I get these guys come back within, you know, a few weeks, and they're just beside themselves, mate. They're just they're distraught because the CSA haven't listened, and they say no, you know, we've already been through this, you know. But the whole problem is that it's very thorough on one side, and it's not so thorough on the other.
Yes, and the resort that the CSA will often refer to is the Social Security Appeals Tribunal, and this is a free tribunal hearing, but the same practice continues, and I have very personal experience of this, where the father has to produce bank statements under an order from the tribunal, all sorts of commercial records. The mother produced nothing, and even though under the legislation there are provisions for up to 6 months jail for not complying with an order to produce financial records, I don't believe any action's ever been taken against the mother for not producing those records. The fathers usually comply, so that discrimination seems to continue beyond the CSA up to the SSAT. Now, on the brighter side, we reported earlier this year about a discrimination that was being practiced by British Airways, and quite an extraordinary story where a father was travelling with his pregnant wife, and his wife decided she'd like to sit by the window, which resulted in the father having to sit next to a child. The father didn't complain about sitting next to the unaccompanied child, but the cabin crew, under some internal rule that prevented adult males sitting next to unaccompanied children, forced the father to sit elsewhere on the plane so he would not be able to sit next to his wife. The man involved, Mirko Fischer, said it made him feel like he was a child molester, and he was not able to sit with his wife on the flight, on the holiday flight with his wife. He actually went to court about this and took an action under the Sex Discrimination Act, and I'm pleased to report that he won his action. He's won a compensation order at the Slough County Court, in which BA admitted the sex discrimination in his case, and they agreed to pay him costs of £2,161 and £750 in damages. More importantly, BA carried out a review of its policy following the case and now says seating of unaccompanied minors is managed in a safe but non-discriminatory manner. Mr. Fisher, who lives in Luxembourg, said he was absolutely delighted by the policy change, and he has donated his compensation money to Kidscape and Orphans in the Wild, two child protection charities. Other airlines, Virgin Atlantic and EasyJet, have said that they do not have a similar policy and passengers were free to sit where they liked. So that's a good news story, a situation where a dad has actually spoken up and done something rather than just taken it and accepted it and allowed this sort of discriminatory behaviour to continue. Might also note there's an article from the Sunday Times in London about Louis de Bernier, who might be recognised by some of our listeners as the author of Captain Corelli's Mandolin. It was a best-selling book by the British author. And as a result of discrimination that he has felt, he intends to raise his strong sense of injustice with British government ministers and will lobby for a change in the law to ensure shared parenting. He actually pointed to the success of such a system in Australia. Well, I don't know whether we've quite got that far in Australia, but we are at the moment heading in the right direction with the judges being forced to consider equal shared time. In this case, the millionaire author, who separated from his girlfriend, Kathy Gill, last year, said the pain of rarely seeing his two young children left him in a state of emotional desolation and repeatedly drove him to the brink. So it appears we now have a champion on the side of dads getting a fair go. Things have improved for Gill, but he says that in order to get the current situation, he's attended mediation sessions. He has spent vast amounts of money in legal fees fighting for the rights to see his two children, Robin, now 5, and Sophie, age 2. So it's good to have someone with a high profile pointing these out, getting some media space, bringing up the level of awareness of what is going on for the dads in this country and around the world. There's also been some articles in the paper about shared parenting. In the weekend edition of the Sydney Morning Herald on August 28, 29, there's a half-page article by Adele Horan, who on this occasion has made some acknowledgements that on the whole, the more contact a child has with both parents, the better for the child. She was quoting Professor Elan Katz, the chief investigator, under this recent study released by the Federal Attorney General Department. The study is based on the responses of 1,028 parents and 136 children. And there's a big picture showing a sense of stability with a shared parenting family, Sean Brogan at home in Croydon with his children. And there are a number of comments from adults and children, all of which seem to be very favourable to equal shared parenting time. And that's what that's where we should be heading. Of course, there are always some people who are against it, and there's a Professor Belinda Felberg, law professor at the University of Melbourne, who said that given that the finding of shared care was not of itself better for children, there seems to be no justification for current legislative approach which encourages parents in this direction. Fairly strange statement. There's also another article by Adele Horan in the same newspaper, and this was on Saturday, August 28, and Although Adele Horan has usually distinguished herself as going against shared parenting, she, on this occasion, has come out and said that no one is calling for a return to the days when separated fathers saw their children every second weekend and half the school holidays. So that's good to see. Maybe she's even listening to the successes of shared parenting and wanting to increase the time from that the old standard of the every second weekend and half school holidays. So maybe there's some light on the horizon. Okay, we might go to a music break, and we'll be back shortly with our first guest.
Jumbo planes taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want if you want, 'cause you can get anything. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day, but tell me, where do the children play? Well, you roll on roads over fresh green grass, your lorry loads pumping petrol gas, and you make them long and you make them tough, but they just go on and on, and it seems that you can't get off. Oh, I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day, but tell me, where do the children play?
Of your child.
Dad's in distress. 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the air. And we're back again. With this time we'll be speaking with Barry Williams, who's the president of the Lone Fathers Association of Australia. Lone Fathers Association was established in 1973 and there are a number of branches around the country. The Lone Fathers Association has been very influential in changing the laws. It was involved in the forerunners to the family relationship centres, and has a growing and continuing influence on bettering the lot of fathers in Australia. Barry, are you on the air? Are you there?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning, Barry. Now, Barry, I understand you are going to raise 4 points of discrimination with the Sex Discrimination Commissioner, Elizabeth Broderick, and I wonder if you could tell us a bit about those.
Well, they stem from our national conference, which we held in Parliament House on the 16th, 17th and 18th of June this year. And there was unanimous vote that, there is discrimination within the ranks of the law, within the Parliament, and with just into everything that daily lives of fathers, they are being discriminated against in every way possible. And one of them that really stands out is that, and I'm a federal lobbyist in Parliament House, and I guess I just haven't did my job good enough, because I've been warning the Ministers for Family, Housing and Community Services, FACSIA, for years now, and the Office of Status of Women, that they're fringing on discrimination by when they put out on the television and the radios on using public money, no violence against women and children. That's great, and we support that, but they're wrong, because it should be no violence against women, men and children, because there's a lot of violence against men out there too, but the government is using taxpayers' money illegally, if you like, and they're discriminating against the sexes. That's one.
Yes, I mean, it's hard to argue against that. There shouldn't be domestic violence against anyone.
That's right. We don't support violence in any shape or form. Now, the funny part about this, I went into the minister's office and spoke to her at length, Tanya Flibberserk, and I said, Tanya, none of the men's groups around Australia condone violence. They don't support violence in any shape or form. But you've got to realise too that violence occurs on both sides, and many studies around the world and even Australia show that. But you people in the Parliament won't listen to it, because you don't want to hear it. You don't want to hear the truth. You just want to go on with what the extreme feminist movement and other researchers and that have an invested interest of keeping children from dads want to hear.
Yes.
And she said, and I said, we want to help. You send us stuff, we'll put in our newsletter. We're the biggest family law reform group in Australia by far, and we had 38 years' experience. And I said, you send it to us, and we'll even put it up on our internet site and in our news. But we will say no violence against men, women, or children.
Yes. Oh, well.
And I said, she said, oh, that's very noble of you, Barry. And I said, yeah. And I said, well, look, would you be able to give us a little bit of funding too? Because the other side of your government ripped off 65,000 of our funding, and we were given that by the opposition. And I said, when they were in power, and now we've got a national office given to us by Mal Brough, but we can't afford to run it because we haven't got the money to have someone on full time, And she said, oh, Barry, I can't. We're only allowed to fund women's groups. So there's another discrimination. So the next thing we moved is we're demanding an officer status of men or a men's minister to combat this officer status of women and stuff like that. Now, the funding, too, is enormous around Australia. We've been able to work out so far, men get with men's line probably about close to $15 million a year. But we don't get it, the people fighting family law. I mean, we get peanuts. Mm. But I think men's line get about $8 million or something. Mm. The women's group so far, and we haven't even scratched yet, we've got up to 200 million of women's services around Australia. Now, we're not saying they don't deserve them. They deserve them, and we support it. But you tell me, where there's any men's refuges, where there's any men's free legal services, where they can go in and get help. The prostate cancer in men's services, we've just got a men's health policy. They put enough money in it to cover every man in Australia 43 cents a year. Mm. And that is scandalous, Men
yes.
are being left behind because we're supposed to be all, according to a lot of them, we're supposed to be all white bashers, murderers and kid molesters. Well, I take offence to that, because most men in Australia, the biggest majority of men would not even think about harming their kids or molesting their kids or something. I mean, there is men who do it, but there's also women who do it. And this is where we're wrong. We're all entrenched with the extreme feminist, and there's a lot of the researchers and people like that within getting the top jobs, even in the parliament and that. And you can't budge them. You know, their thinking is just, oh, well, you're men, so you must be bad sort of thing.
Yeah, just on that financial side, you mentioned that small amount that goes to for men's interest, and yet I think if you looked at the tax paid, it's probably something over 80% of the tax is paid by men, but they get almost nothing back. It all goes to the women's groups, doesn't it?
Yeah. Look, we've got to look at family law. The family law, in many aspects, is very good in some areas where, in principle, but in reality, the way it's served out is not very good. You know, we've got to admit it. Family law is a billion-dollar industry, and it thrives on people's misery and people when they're down and out and when they're losing their family. Barristers, I've seen it myself, I've seen it a dozen times. They go in there and the case could be over in a couple of hours. They extend it and extend it for days and days and days. And eventually you think these poor buggers in there trying to get some sort of solution, and it's cost them $30,000 already. I'll never forget, I won't mention his name, but one of the most prominent judges in Australia told us twice, we can only give one side, hook one side, you know, we can only give them, we can't do it for both sides.
Can't
give
justice for both sides.
That's the word I was trying to think of, yeah. Mm. Now, I think a lot of people heard that too at our last conference, and I also heard it in a conference in Gosford. That's disgusting, that, you know, we're supposed to be a civilised country. We preach other country human rights and civil liberties, but they break them here. And the next thing that I want to talk about is they preach the rights of the child, that they're always in the best interest of the rights of the child and the paramount interest. Well, the paramount interest of the rights of the child in anyone's mind is that if the parents are both good parents, then the best interest of the child, even though the marriage is broke up, to have a shared relationship with them. I'm scared. I'm really scared. There is movement to try and overturn the new shared laws, and none other than two of the biggest researchers in Australia are forcing this, trying to force this. One's an ex-judge who states he's not against shared care. Well, you've only got to read his articles and stuff like that, and you can see he is against shared care.
I think we're talking about Richard Chisholm there, aren't we?
Yeah, and also, Jennifer McIntosh she spoke to me in Sydney at a conference, and she said, she tried to tell me one of my members threatened her, and I said, how do you know it was one of my members? She said, because he was a lone dad. Well, I'm sorry, every lone dad in Australia don't belong to lone fathers. And I said to her, what did he do? They said, oh, he rang up and threatened me about my research. And I said, well, they don't say he come from us. It could be anybody, you know. And her research too, I don't think she's completely against shared care, but I think she's against, in parts, of principles of it. But all these people who get government funding, they all seem to be the ones who have a problem with shared care of children. They try to say that if the child's 2-year-old or something like that, it shouldn't leave the mother and that. Well, hang on. I know cases where, you know, I myself read a 3-month-old child and three other kids and, you know, had them from the day the child was 3 months old, and my kids haven't got any psychological problems or stuff like that, and they've all grown up and become great people, working, you know, paying their taxes and stuff like that. So
yeah,
they've got it quite wrong the way they demand. But the other thing we're putting out, I don't want to keep you too long, the other thing we're putting out is we're asking whichever government gets in, we want an enforcement area. Either within the family court, they give the family court more money, or they do it outside the family court, but it's got to be called an enforcement a panel or something like that. And we're saying that the federal police, who are empowered already to be able to enforce orders, but the state police haven't. And they give the state police the powers too to go and pick up the children, and they get there, and if the children are not hurt or anything like that, like half the time that they're accused of being bashed or something like that, then they should enforce that order of access, because the family court is the only court in the world that I know of where they make orders and then people can just turn their nose up against them and say, I'm not going to obey it, and there's no punishment, there's no nothing, you know, and the only thing the other person's got is to go back and pay another fortune to barristers. This is where it's all tied up together in money-making racket for barristers and that to go to, or solicitors to go back to court and try and get that access enforced. And it's not always successful. And people are out to lie and get away in the family court, lie there, and there's no comeback, you know, and stuff like that.
Well, they've actually made it harder for contravention applications because you run a serious risk of being stung with the costs.
That's right.
So you're actually discouraged from enforcing the orders for the court when you'd have to think, well, the court should want to enforce its own orders, wouldn't you?
Well, I just seen a case in Queanbeyan where a bloke had worked all his life since he left school, went and built himself up, bought a rigging business, made it work. While he was away working, his partner was his bookkeeper. She ripped off $100,000 out of his books on drugs that he didn't know she was using drugs, you know. When he came home, he didn't have enough money to pay his employers for their Christmas holiday, so he borrowed on future contracts he had, and he paid them. Anyway, they broke up, and down the line, after 18 months, she wanted to come back. He took her back, and she did the same virtue thing again. Only this time she took him to court. She hadn't lived in the house for 4 years, which he worked on, did all up and everything. And the court ruled that he has to get out of the house, give it to her, pay the $300,000 mortgage on it, and she'll give him $30,000 back. So he's had to, naturally, he's got to pay child support too for one daughter, but naturally he's had to sell his business to be able to do all this. So where's the justice in that sort of thing? And the irony of it is that while I'm sitting there, I heard the judge say to her barrister, I've never done one of these before. I'm going to have to be guided by you. Mm. And he said, oh, well, usually the thing is 60% to the woman and 40% to the man. And the reason for that is because he's been away working all the time and she's had the kids. And he's probably been out drunk every night with his mates. And the judge did say, well, there's no evidence to show that. And the judge couldn't make up his mind. He said, I'll give my verdict the following Tuesday. When the verdict came out, they all thought it'd be a 50-50 split. They were horrified that he had to give up his house. She had a house. He has to give his house up. He's got nowhere to live now. Pay the $300,000 mortgage and sell his cranes and everything, so he's got no business now. It's just unbelievable what they do.
That's a scandal, and it's very short-sighted because he hasn't got the business now, so how is he going to keep the payments up?
You know, we as men in this country are our own worst enemies. We're an organisation, and we don't expect everyone to join us. There's other organisations around too, but we try to do the right thing. We do have had great success in a lot of amendments now. But where there's a million men out there and 670,000 of them can't see their kids and yet they've got court orders, where are all they supporting us and carrying on, you know, so we can beat this? If every man stood up in Australia and always said this and just said to all they have to say is to their federal member, we're sick and tired of this, we're sick and tired of losing our family, and I would guarantee that within a month the laws would be changed and, you know, they would never look at tearing down the shared care laws, because they, once you say you're not voting for them and that, you know, again, they want your vote, believe me, because it's dollars for them.
Yes, well, the shared parenting, when people go against it, it's really like code. They're not saying, all right, we don't like shared parenting, therefore the men should get them about the same time as the women. It's just a code for saying that the women are going to have the child, isn't it, rather than share it with the father.
That's right. Well, you know, I don't care what anyone says. We've did a lot of study in shared care laws, and we've got a fair big membership around Australia, and we hear from people we've got a lot of women members, 33% women members, and because I'm the longest person involved in Parents Without Partners in the world too, and I'm still the vice president and their voice in the Parliament for Parents Without Partners Australia. And I hear from many of them, many of the women who have got shared, who have allowed shared care, and they're as happy as a pig in mud. They said it gives them a bit more time. It, the kids are doing better at school and everything like that. But when you try to tell these clowns, I call them clowns, these researchers, this, they don't want to hear about from the two biggest single parent groups in Australia. They only want to go on about people, academics who learn out of books and things like that, you know.
Yeah, so are you optimistic at the moment, Barry? Are things heading in the right direction, or do you think we're...
I really think they are, because I've already rang the commissioners, the Discrimination Commissioner, Elizabeth Broderick's office, and told her these four amendments are coming, and if she does not look at them positive, we are going to lobby to try and have her job taken away from her, because it means she has a she is discriminative, you know?
Yes.
We can't have... The government says, and the Constitution says, you can't discriminate against anyone in this country, you know, yet the governments are causing it all themselves. And the government are fueling these marriage breakdowns and that, and everything like that, by the amount of people, they fund one sex against the other.
Mm.
You know, as I said, the women have many services and they need them.
I've got
blokes in Canberra here with kids. I had one just recently. I couldn't even get him a place to stay. And lone fathers had to pay for his overnight accommodation. And we haven't got much money, you know, because we could not... He would have spent the night on the street with his kids.
Mm. Yeah, I have to say, I've never heard Elizabeth Broderick talking about discrimination against men, so it might be a first if you're able to prevail on her.
Yeah, well, we intend pushing it, and if they don't, we're going to take a class action against them. So I need the support from around Australia, from grandparents, mums, dads, everybody in this, because this is our big thing. You know, we've got to stop it right now. It's gone on too much. There's too many children in this country missing out on seeing their dad. And as John Howard said before when he agreed to bring in the shared care laws, he said there's over 1 million dads in this country who can't see their kids. At the best, can only see them every second weekend and sometimes after school holidays. It's not good enough. They've got to have days through the week too.
Yes.
Now, you know, my argument is, okay, you don't pay your child support, they'll hound you till they get it. They'll do anything to get it. But if you can't see your kids, no one's on your side to help you force that access.
Mm.
And that's another discrimination that the government's allowing to happen. So, they're the discrimination things we do. But we really want that enforcement area in the family court or outside the court, if you like, to make sure that the kids' rights are upheld.
Yes, and that may come under perhaps the Attorney General should have some involvement in that as well. But so, Barry, as I understand...
Well, I spoke to Robert McClellan about this. Robert McClellan told me 2 years ago, you'll be happy to know that we're bringing in enforcement orders. Well, 2 years has gone by, and we haven't seen a damn thing about it. You know, all we've seen is I've met with Robert McClellan twice this year on different matters about when first Chisholm and that was going to get money over to look into the shared care laws and that. And Robert McClellan asked me, would I work with Mr. Chisholm? And I said, frankly, no. And he said, why? I said, because he's quite known to be against shared care laws. And he said, oh, I don't think he's only against where the violence area are. And I said, well, what do you determine violence? And he said, well, what do you determine violence? I said, well, I determine violence when it's proven that the violence occurred, not on mere allegations alone, which most violence is decided that it must have happened on just allegations from one side. And he said, oh, I don't think he wants... Well, we got a letter from Mr. Chisholm asking him could he meet with us, and him and his secretary come around and met with Jim Carter and I for an hour and a half here in my office. And he tried to convince me too that they were not against shared care. Now, if you read his report, it wanders from one to the other, whereas he's saying young children should not be taken away from the mother and that, not, you know, what do they call young children? A child at 2 years old knows who its parents are. And that means that is the prime time when they should have big contact with both parents, and it's not hard to give contact if you're living in close proximity to each other.
Hmm. And that seems to be one way to get around it, just move away, and then all of a sudden you have to worry about shared parenting.
Yeah, well, I can tell you what, those who... people out there listening should... it's not safe, the shared parenting laws. It depends which government gets back in and that, and, you know, whichever government gets back in, we've got a lot of work, us and others, to do to retain this. It was the biggest breakthrough in family law in Australia, the 2006 amendments, and I know there is many powers out there trying to overturn. I'm not sure whether this is true or not, but I've heard that the Attorney General has 5,000 signatures from the extreme feminist movement stating they want it overturned because it's not good for kids, and men are usually child molesters and wife bashers and everything like that, you know. But I don't think I'll give Robert his due. I don't think he's going down that line, but I just want to warn people, this is how low some of them will go, and some of the researchers are lower than dogs, some of them out there, you know, and they've only got an opinion of their own, and they are against shared care themselves, and they'll push anything, even as much as build up statistics, wrong statistics, to enforce their studies.
Yes, well, we referred earlier this morning to a couple of newspaper articles in the Sydney Morning Herald suggesting that new government has to do something about it, so I don't think we can afford to sit back yet. We have to keep the fight going for a while.
I'm getting on. As I said, I did 38 years. I'm tired. I always did it in the best of my ability. I'm not praising myself, but I've never, ever had a day's wage for doing it. I've always struggled by myself and, you know, never took any money out of the organisation for wages or anything like that. But there comes a time when you've got to think, well, you know, maybe you've been around too long or something like that.
Well, you continue to do so much good work, Barry. We don't want you to leave any time soon. But just this coming up, these 4 points of discrimination, I was just going to run through them again. There's the discriminatory advertising of domestic violence. Hmm. There's the lack of an office for the status of men.
Hmm.
There's the bias in funding of women's programs and community services over those of men. And then there's the lack of a system of enforcement of family court orders that mainly disadvantages fathers as opposed to the very powerful enforcement regime of the Child Support Agency. So they're the four issues you're going to be taking to Elizabeth Broderick.
Yeah, it's actually called an enforcement bureau.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you can't have people with an invested interest doing it. You've got to have people who, you know, the law goes out and they say, well, why have you, to the other part, why aren't you abiding by the orders, unless she can show good reason and show proof of that reason, not just allegations, then, you know, the police enforce that order there and then.
Yep,
and that will save a lot of suicides and everything like that.
Yep, and it saves you having to go to court, as you say, to enforce
being ripped off.
Yeah, well, look, they're very noble aims, Barry. And do you have a date yet for seeing Elizabeth Broderick?
Well, I'm just waiting to see who forms government. I'll be in there, don't worry. As soon as I can get the appointment, it'll either be with whoever forms government. I guess if it's Labor forms government again, it'll be with probably McClellan. If the coalition, it will be with Brandis. And I will try to get to whichever's prime minister, you know.
Well... We wish you all the very best here from Dad's on the Air, Barry, and we hope you can continue with the great work you're doing for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And, look, thanks again for coming on the show today.
Well, I'm just telling you before I go, the minute I do it, I'm going to contact Current Affairs and all the media around Australia to say, we need your support in this.
Yes.
You know?
Well, look, that's great, and as I say, from Dad's on the Air, we wish you all the best, and if we can help in any way, let us know, because we're on your side.
Good on you, mate.
All right. Thanks very much for your call, Barry.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. For the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. I know a man, he came from my hometown. He wore his passion for his woman like a thorny crown. He said, Dolores, I live in fear. My love for you is so overpowering, I'm afraid that I will disappear. Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. And I know a woman became a wife. These are the very words she uses to describe her life. She said a good day ain't got no rain. She said a bad day's when I lie in bed and think of things that might have been. Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. The nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. And I know a father who had a son. He longed to tell him all the reasons for the things he'd done. He came a long way just to explain. Kissed his boy as he lay sleeping, then he turned around and headed home again. His slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. God only knows, God makes his plan. The information's unavailable to the mortal man. We're working our jobs, collect our pay. Believe we're gliding down the highway when in fact we're slip sliding away. Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. Slip sliding away, slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away.
Cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air, this 31st day of August 2010. And our next guest is Stephen Holden. Stephen lives on the Gold Coast, got it made there up in God's country, and he earns a living through university teaching and business consulting. Stephen's interests are philosophy, writing, surfing, psychology and fathering. Are you there, Stephen?
I am. Hello, Bill.
Hi. Well, Stephen, we wanted to ask you about your new blog, The Other Glass Ceiling, and it's a very interesting concept that we've been hearing about women's glass ceiling for forever, and you've found another one.
Yep. I think the original women's glass ceiling was a concept coined in about 1980, and but it's been a very powerful metaphor and worked, I think, very well for women's rights and so on. Our argument about the women's glass ceiling is that it's really focused on the public domain, meaning the world of work, and the way in which women can't rise up through the corporation and they feel like they're hitting an invisible barrier. Well, the flip side to that, the other glass ceiling, is that in the private domain, men, be they divorced or even together with their wives still, can bounce against an invisible barriers when they try to step into parenting roles. It's not necessarily a barrier created just by women either. A man trying to step away into the home, away from a job, is going to be subject to a lot of stigma from the public, from other men, from women, and possibly from his own family. So that's the other glass ceiling.
Yes, well, I've always wondered about the women's glass ceiling in any event, because maybe they've just been a bit smarter. I mean, you know, what's the attraction of, really, of, you know, going to work every day and coming home exhausted, hand the money over, and then get ready to go and do it all again the next day?
Well, it's funny you should say that. That's exactly what will appear at some point on the blog. I've already written exactly that.
Mm.
What exactly is so delightful about the life of a man who gives roughly 50 years of his life working 40 hours a week to be away from his family, when everybody says, you know, on your deathbed, the last thing anybody wished for was an extra day of work.
I think that's right. And what do they wish for?
Well, I think they probably wish for time with their family, their friends, their relatives. You know, I suspect that most of us regret the relationships. I'm not, in this blog, I'm certainly not trying to say that the women are the cause of this. I actually think that men are the cause of this. I think that I'm inviting men to step up, that it's time for them to not complain about, you know, the other glass ceiling, but to recognise it and do what everyone's ever done when they've encountered problems.
So, and what do you see as those barriers? Is it it's the general perception in the community? Is that the main one?
Look, there's a number of different barriers. I came at this through a divorce, and I think that the whole idea had been sort of simmering in my head for many years. I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and so I was very much exposed to the women's movement. And I always felt that it didn't quite work for me. Stephen Biddulph, in his book, Manhood, talks about Billy Connolly and Jermaine Greer in one particular set of interviews together. And Billy Connolly, when he enters, is asked, you know, what do you think about feminism? And he sort of says something along the lines of, you know, it's just not my holy grail. And that really is how I feel about it. But this other glass ceiling one is, it's really an invitation for men to step up, not perhaps the way that women have done, to organize, but to individually take a stand for those things that matter. And you asked, where exactly are the barriers? Well, some of the barriers that I felt as a man going through divorce was that I had to fight for the right to see my child. The culmination of it all was when I was accused of molesting my son, and I was visited by three police officers and two child protection agency people. You know, that night is burned into my memory. It was touch and go whether my son would be with me at the end of that meeting. It was very clear that they didn't come just to say hello.
Well, you can be labelled with something like that, can't you, basis of an allegation.
That's right. And I think, you know, through the Freedom of Information Act, I sought information about what the allegation was, and I sought it in writing, and the allegation submitted to me was all blocked out, perhaps to protect the identity of the accuser, which is fine. But what I objected to was that the basis of the allegation, or the basis of their visiting me, was one that I just thought was preposterous. If a similar allegation had been made against a woman, nobody would have visited. They would have said, well, of course you take a shower with your child and wash their private parts. But when the accusation is made against a man, it's like, oh, that's not right. And I have a problem with that.
Yes, well, look, it's interesting you mentioned Steve Bidoff. I went to a talk from Stephen yesterday, actually, in North Sydney Library, and he was talking about his new book, the New Manhood book.
Right.
And, yes, he was, well, he was raising some of the issues we were talking about a few minutes ago with the fathers don't have these expectations, and they expect that they're just going to be a wallet that goes to work every day and don't have the right to demand any sort of happiness that women seem to have realised some time ago that, you know, is their right.
That's right. Look, I think, you know, some other elements of this glass ceiling is, again, sort of post-divorce, going through counselling, when a woman who was pretty clearly a feminist said to me in the meeting, she, you know, trying to placate me and make me feel calmer, and said, look, your role's very important. Your role is to provide financially for the child. And I said, well, in a counselling situation as a man, I knew better to keep my mouth shut. But, of course, if I'd said to her, well, your role as a woman is to produce children, we all know what would have happened then. I would have been, at best, a trophy on the wall. it was outrageous that a counsellor could say that to me in a meeting. And I realised that it is much more than just separated fathers. I went back and looked back at my life prior to that, and I realised that a man around children is often regarded as somehow less capable, or can be regarded as less capable. But I had a nice observation from a, funnily enough, an Australian friend of mine who lived in the States for many years. And she said to me, she said, you know, fathers in the United States sort of have become mummified. You know, when they try to become a parent, they do what the mother tells them to do. She said, I like Australian men better because they father in their own way. And that's what I'm getting at. That's what I would like us to... I don't know whether the cultural stereotype works exactly, but I do think there are some men that step into the role as a father, and they do it not as a second mum, but they do it in their own terms, and they relate to their children in their own terms. And I think that our society has overlooked the importance of that relationship of father to children, both boys and girls.
Yes, and we're speaking with Stephen Holden, who has a blog, The Other Glass Ceiling. Stephen, with this blog, are you looking for people to come onto the site and perhaps put their own stories in? Or?
Yes, I haven't set it up that we'll necessarily post the stories, but I've allowed two ways that people can do that. One is that they can provide a comment on any of the postings that's there, and I plan to add to it weekly. In fact, much of it's already written. It's just a case of posting weekly. But the other way that somebody could add a story is that they can contact me through the About tab and just send me a story directly, and I'm happy to look at it. And if they're open for it to be used, then certainly we may be able to incorporate that as well.
Great. So, so where should they go on the website? Should they just go to...
Okay, it's www.theotherglassceiling.com. So www.theotherglassceiling.com. If you go through Google, I think we're roughly the second one there. Ironically, the only other use of the title The Other Glass Ceiling was a pair of women writing about how men weren't pulling their weight in the home.
So that's so definitely...
Really they tried to commandeer the term for everything, but I don't think it really works as well for them as it does for us. But
no, there you go. So that's definitely not your listing, I take it. No.
But ours is the only website that you'll get to. If you don't even have to put in the W's, theotherglassceiling.com will get you right there.
Right. And just talking about those women, I mean, I sometimes get the feeling that the men's movement's going to really take off when the women do get involved, you know, maybe the second wives or people that are affected. You know, the men don't seem to. We run up against this all the time. The men don't seem to. They're not active enough to actually do things and get things. You know, improve things.
Look, I think that's possibly the case. I think there's a certain irony about this. Look, I actually genuinely believe there are differences between men and women, and children are the living proof of that. But you know, we have this I think the equality movement has sort of misled us. And there can't be equality. Men and women are different. And if we weren't different, we really couldn't produce babies. So the fact that that translates into psychological differences doesn't really surprise me. Will women organize differently and you know, made a big movement and a big noise? I mean, and it's been going on for a long time, right back to the suffragettes. Men, the ones that I admire, are the ones that just quietly get on and go, you know, deal with the problem that's facing them. When I was going through my issues, people said to me, you know, you're going to become one of the desperate dads and so on and join one of these movements. And I said, look, I use them for support, but I'm not a supporter of making a big protest and so on. I think that at that particular point, I had a fight. It was a very personal one. I had to ask myself constantly, was I doing the right thing? And I decided I was, and I fought for what I believed in. But it was to me a very appropriate challenge for a man. I had to step up and decide, how do I deal with this? Do I let go? Is that the best thing for my son? Or do I push on for what I believe is, in fact, the best thing for him? And so forth.
And you decided on the latter, I take it.
I did. And you know, fortunately, and frankly, I have to thank his mum a little bit. I mean, she backed away and eventually agreed to allow us to come to an arrangement, which I find very satisfactory. We have full 50-50 shared care. I believe my son benefits by it enormously. And not that she's made the comments to me directly, but I have heard indirectly that she's also made comments that he seems a lot happier. So I feel that perhaps I was justified, and you know, that it was good to have faith in what I believed in.
Yeah, well, definitely. And the difficult one is when the child is alienated against the other parent, and there's no like, I take it the relationship with your son was always good, but when that gets turned against, it makes it even harder to keep that relationship up.
That's right. And look, you know, there's lots of these invisible glass ceilings. A lot of them are certainly around. I think they became really, really apparent to me when I looked at as separated and divorced men. But you know, a man is asked to look after his child, you know, perhaps at best two days every fortnight, maybe even one day, as I know some men have. And counsellors will tell you, you know, it's about the quality, not the quantity. Mm. And the irony about all of that to me is that when the relationship was together, even if the man was working, there was a good chance he saw the child at least once a day, even if only for 30 minutes.
Yep.
So the men know very well quality over quantity. You know, they've already done what they need to do to help the family survive, and they sacrifice a lot for that, but then they look after the child for 30 minutes when they come home and so on. But they lose all of that, and I feel also, I think that our system is overlooking that, you know, the dads that do fall apart, and it's not surprising to me, you know, that they've lost a wife, they've lost a child or children, and they've lost a home. It's not surprising that a lot of them fall into depression and really end up in a horrible way. But again, for me, this is a call to them to step up for what you believe in. And you won't necessarily get it all, but what is it they say? Better to die fighting on your feet than live fighting on your feet than die on your knees. You know, it's not a horrible way for a man to go.
So what sort of stories are you looking for from the men to go into the other glass ceiling?
Well, I guess if the metaphor of the other glass ceiling is one that appeals to men, that, you know, they can talk about situations in which there is a double standard, they see a double standard operating against them as a man that would not operate against them if they were a woman. We already have quite a lot of stories, and again, a lot of it's already written up and stuff. I had situations, again, this was before separation, where I took my son into supermarkets, and I had complete strangers, women, walk up to me and tell me how to look after my son. And I went, what makes you think you have a right to tell me? How, you know, I was being told that what I was doing was wrong. I was gobsmacked. And I thought, nobody does that to a mother, you know, they don't step up and tell them, oh, what you're doing is wrong. And
no, even when sometimes it's quite obvious that it is wrong, but nevertheless they still wouldn't do it, I suspect.
I think you're right. And so situations like that, so some of the stuff you'll see on the blog talks about things where there is inequality, and always will be. I mean, in many of the areas of reproduction, women pretty much have control. And I think it pays for a man to actually understand that from the moment of conception pretty much through to the end of lactation, what the woman says goes.
Yes, I'm just looking at an article here that you've written on Roe versus Wade, which everyone seems to know the name of the case, but very few people know the real story there.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I guess it's a famous case because it was a turning point in American history when essentially abortion on demand, roughly, became legalized. But what's not so well known, and I think it's in that particular section, is that one of the judges makes the point. He expressed some words of caution. He said, "I give this right to the woman, but I do it with some reluctance, knowing that the man has no voice in this decision. None." And, you know, again, this relates back to my experience in the 70s, 80s, and 90s as a man before, you know, being married and with child, and just thinking that there was something not quite right when I was asked, am I pro-choice or am I, you know, pro-life? And I went, something didn't work. And again, it wasn't until much later it suddenly clicked. This was all about the mum versus the fetus.
Yeah.
The other parent is just invisible. You don't get a stronger other glass ceiling than that.
And the other side of that equation also is that when the woman's made the decision, it's the father then has to pay child support for the next 18 years.
If she chooses to carry, he pays. If she chooses not to carry, he has no right to say, I really want this child anyway. So this, to me, is this other glass ceiling. And I put it up to say, perhaps to particularly some of the antagonistic women's rights movement, look, back off, stop blaming men. You know, if we're going to really look at who's got the rawest deal, and I don't think that's a sensible thing to do, but if we were going to, we need to draw up a balance sheet. And in that balance sheet, some of the things like this would have to be put there. And, of course, there is no resolution to this. I'm certainly not seeking to overturn Roe versus Wade. I think that was an important advance, and I think it is an important issue. And it's one that, you know, women, I think, had every right to fight for. But to ignore the role of men is really just to turn a blind eye to it. Well, that's definitely an invisible ceiling.
Yes, there are a number of these strange sort of examples. I mean, the one in recent times that struck me is Tiger Woods.
Right.
You know, he admittedly he's done the wrong thing by in his marriage, in perhaps having all those other relationships. But I can't see the justification for his wife attacking him with a golf club. You know,
that's exactly right.
Put it the other way around, and you can imagine the uproar. And yet, I've mentioned this to men, and they can't see it. They sort of say, "Oh, well, you know, he deserved it. You know,
he was an idiot."
Now
here's the irony. You just said, and men say he deserved it. And this again is where, I'm not an advocate for a men's movement particularly, but I am an advocate for men thinking clearly about these issues. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that, you know, Tiger Woods was a fool, but I think the whole thing was much worse for him because of his media status. But nothing justifies one human being, whatever gender, attacking another human being. And, you know, we've all seen the fight recently here in Australia and the one in three arguments that. And of course, that's probably, well, nobody really knows the numbers, but a lot of the data suggests that domestic violence is roughly 50-50. Men, we do know, are much less likely to report. But here's the real kicker. Here's the invisible, you know, the other glass ceiling. When a man reports to police, it's very common for him to be laughed at. Mm. He's told to go away and deal with it. And yet I've known men, you know, the great big, you know, football players, stars, who tell me that they've been attacked by their wife or ex-wife with a knife or whatever. And there was a case in the United States, a linebacker. You know, this is a very big man.
They're like moving apartment blocks, aren't they?
That's roughly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And he was attacked by a very petite girlfriend who stabbed him with scissors.
Mm.
And when he was asked, would he like to lay charges, he said no. Now, that's fine, that was his choice, but I just don't think that that's a sensible way to go. And, you know, so I find this really problematic.
That indicates the difficulties that men have, doesn't it, in going to the police and reporting it?
Exactly, and So I don't think we know the data on this. I mean, what proportion of domestic violence is one way or the other? But I have a fundamental objection to, for instance, the White Ribbon Day, not for the cause of being against domestic violence, but for the fact that we turn a blind eye to any domestic violence that's going in the other direction. Mm. And my attitude is, why do we treat the victims of one side as somehow more important than the victims of the other side, or one sex as more important than the other sex? And it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yes, and well, to give credit to some women out there who I think also recognise that this is a crazy situation, are you getting women contributors to the blog?
Well, the blog, to be honest, has only just been posted, and I'm frankly amazed at how many visitors we're getting already. I haven't even started to broadcast it through networks. So I'm at this point simply delighted to get any comments and responses and thoughts. My reading of other blogs and other similar sorts of materials is, yes, there are women. And perhaps to pick up on something you said, when women make these comments, which I think is ironic in its own right, it's like people pay more attention. Mm. There's a terrific book out of the United States by a woman called Kathleen Parker. It's called Save the Male. Mm. And she's a columnist, and she writes extremely well, and it's very funny and light. But the things she says are all these issues. And she says it very, very well, and she has very high credibility because she's a woman. Mm. And she's raising two boys, I think, from memory, and she talks about her horror at the way that men are just dismissed and reduced to nothing, to mere ciphers.
Yes, I've heard that said before. A woman's voice is sometimes worth two or three times the usual male voice in this area. Mm. So that's what I'm thinking is, you know, if we can get some more women on side, I think it'll greatly help to get rid of the glass ceiling that we're talking about.
That's right. And I think that's the... to me, that's the other thing that I want to do is I really want to get men and women to pull together to tear down the glass ceilings where they can be torn down. To me, the glass ceiling in the original context is perhaps, I think, a little bit overused now. A lot of the differentials and so on have been removed and so on. And I'm not saying there aren't residual problems still confronting individual women, but there's always problems confronting individual people. You know, for instance, in the glass ceiling context, women complain that they're not, you know, represented on the boardrooms. There's an awful lot of men out there that want a place in the boardroom, and they're not getting it either.
That's right. They don't expect it as a right just because of their sex that they'll go onto the boardroom
table.
That's
right. That's right. And for women to say they deserve equal representation, it needs to be more than simply showing that they're equally represented in the world. They need to be equally represented, at least in the workplace, in full-time employment, which they're not generally, and so on. So, and you know, the women that have made it to those points, a lot of people are critical of, you know, Angela Merkel and so on. You know, these women are almost like men in the way they are, and I think that reflects something about what we call the public sphere, the world of work. You know, the world of work is a competitive environment; it is a dog eat dog world. It's very suited to the stereotype of males who, you know, go out and beat the hell out of whatever in the world to bring home the food. That doesn't mean women can't enjoy and join in that domain, but those are the rules of engagement to some extent. Now, of course, like the way that I hope that men bring to the home, the private sphere, their own special stamp of parenting, I would also hope that women bring to the corporate sphere their own special stamp, which might be something more like cooperation and so on. There's definitely room for more of that.
Yes, well, and thank you for that reference. Save the Male by Kathleen Parker. That sounds like an interesting one to read.
Yes, no, she's a brilliant book. I probably should put some of those on the Save the Males. It is, yeah, Kathleen Parker.
Males.
She writes beautifully. I mean, it's truly a pleasure to read this book. What I like is it's not angry. There's an awful lot written out there already. A lot of it from male points of view, but a lot of it quite angry. And one of the things that I hope with the blog is that I don't want to simply add fuel to the angry voices. I'd hope that we can move towards some kind of resolution of this. That this is a domain that needs addressing, so that in the future we can say we are pushing towards, well, not equality, but equity.
Yes.
And equity means equal opportunity.
Yes.
That dads can participate as parents and women can participate as corporate members, and we'll always be perhaps a little disadvantaged. You know, men cannot birth a baby and so on, but that doesn't mean they can't have an opportunity there to play their role. And I think that, in fact, the role of a male parent is a very important one. It complements the mother. And we live in a world where there's so many single-parent households. Most of them are female, and frankly, I don't think it matters whether they're mostly female or mostly male. A single-parent household is missing something. If it takes a village to raise a child, then one parent raising that child is just not going to cut it.
Well, we know the most desirable aspect. Well, we've been speaking with Stephen Holden. Stephen, thank you very much for coming on the show. I think we've run out of time. I could talk to you for hours, I think. But look, thank you very much again for coming on the show. Wish you all the best with your new blog, The Other Glass Ceiling.
Thank you, Bill.
And people can get to that by just Googling The Other Glass Ceiling, and they'll get all the information on you and the blog.
They will indeed. And yes, it'll be coming out regularly, updates weekly, but there's more material there. If people want to see it, they can ask me and I'm happy to share it.
That's fantastic. Well, we wish you all the best. And once again, thanks for coming on the show, Stephen.
Thank you very much, Bill. Cheers.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Gotta take a little time, a little time to think things over. I better read between the lines in case I need it when I'm older. Mountain I must climb feels like a world upon my shoulder. Through the clouds I see love shine. It keeps me warm as life grows colder. In my life there's been heartache and pain.
Dad's in distress, meet in your area week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dad's in distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air, and our next guest is Warwick Marsh from the Fatherhood Foundation. Warwick, are you there?
Hello there, Warwick Marsh here, Dad's for Kids. How are you doing?
Well, thank you, Warwick, and first of all, may I wish you Happy Father's Day for this Sunday.
Hey, it's going to be a great day on Sunday, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. I know you're a father, we're all dads, and I just was hoping you might have a message for some of us about Father's Day and what you're looking forward to.
Well, besides the socks and the socks and the Maltesers, I know I've got a bit of a sweet tooth in my family.
Yeah.
Look, it's a great day because dads do make a lot of sacrifices, just like mums do. And, in fact, we had our family dinner last night and we were debating because at the church we go to, they actually make Father's Day for all men. And they said, what do you think of that, you know, celebrating all men on Father's Day? Shouldn't we just celebrate fathers? And I said, well, you know, I think it doesn't hurt to have a celebration for, you know, all men on Father's Day. And we were debating it, and my two daughters-in-law felt quite strongly that it should just be about fathers. And, of course, they pointed out that fathers, to be a parent, is to go to another level of sacrifice, and mothers make that sacrifice, and fathers do too. So, hey, it's Father's Day this coming Sunday, and it's a day that we can be happy. It's our little moment of fame in the sun, and I think we should celebrate.
Quite agree. And so how many children have you got, Warwick?
Well, I've got five and two grandchildren and another grandchild on the way, so we've got a big family, and we're sort of pretty happy, and it's good to be happy, isn't it?
Yeah, well, look, I think you certainly qualify for the Father's Day celebrations.
Yep.
And I believe you're driving to Sydney at the moment, aren't you?
Yes, we're driving to Sydney. Unfortunately, the New South Wales government under Christine Kenneally wants to give fathers a horrible present, and that is to create legal fiction and make it permissible for homosexuals to adopt children. Now, you might say, well, what has that got to do with me? Well, the reality of that is it takes a mother and a father to create a child, and to create legal fiction and tell two mothers or two fathers that they can be both mother and father to a child is an absolute lie, because, you know, children need a mother and a father. Yes, children don't grow up with... they do often grow up at situations where there's tragedy. They lose a dad, they lose a mum. But we should never legislate for that. And unfortunately, the Family Law Court over the last 30 years has perniciously legislated towards removing fathers from the family home. And, of course, this is a classic example of that sort of legislation that is quite pernicious towards men as fathers.
So removing the natural father and instead supporting a gay couple as the parents.
Yes. Well, you know, it all sounds very, very nice in the sense, oh, well, you know, they can be parents too. Well, yes, of course, anyone can be parents. But what you're doing here is you're creating legal fiction, and you're saying a child does not need a mother and a father. Now, those people that actually populated the Family Law Court with this sort of ridiculous notion that children don't matter and that children don't need a mother and a father, you know, unfortunately, the same group pushing it. Clover Moore is a very strong feminist. She's the one proposing the bill. And Christine Kenneally, I thought she had more sense. We've got a situation where the trains don't run on time, people can die in a hospital waiting room, we've got children getting killed in the playgrounds, and she is pushing forward a bill and allowing a bill to come forward. But she actually said herself 6 months ago had no community support. Mm. So it's a pretty crazy world we live in, isn't it?
And what's this bill actually going to do, Warwick?
Well, basically, it's going to allow homosexual couples to adopt a child. You know, we've got hundreds of heterosexual couples that are desperate for a child, and they're waiting in line. There's only 15 children each year given up for adoption in New South Wales. And here we are about to fast-track a bill through to allow children to be brought up in a legal sense
without a father. And I just think that's reprehensible because fatherlessness has been shown to cause many problems. 70% of inmates in prison are fatherless. 73-74% of young men who suffer from drug addiction are fatherless. 90% of homeless young people are fatherless. So fatherlessness causes problems. Problems and to actually create a fatherless society by law is the most atrocious thing you can possibly think of.
Yes, well, it seems uncalled for when there are so many people waiting in the adoption queue. I mean, I think there's been fostering of children by gay couples for a while, hasn't there?
There has been, but, you know, that's by the actual different agencies and, you know, I guess they should... They do what they do. I don't believe that that's a good thing for children. I think children need a mother and a father. And unfortunately, some of these agencies have become infected by political correctness. And, you know, I mean, it's a great message for the fathers of New South Wales, isn't it? Come out to Father's Day. You don't matter. And we're going to make sure in legal terms that children don't need a mother and a father if they're put out for adoption. I think that's a great present. It's a horrible present for the fathers of New South Wales for Father's Day.
Yes, look. Unfortunately, I think some of these lobby groups look out for Father's Day for all sending out all the wrong messages. But look, it's always great talking to you, Warwick. I think the music's going to start soon. We're going to be cut off, but I just wanted to have a quick word to you on the positive sides and all the pleasures that having a good father-son relationship or father-child relationship can bring to people.
It's great to be with you, and happy Father's Day to all the listeners and dads on air. And again, thank you for your support for the dads of Australia. You guys are awesome, and congratulations.
Thank you very much, Warwick. That's Warwick Marsh from the Fatherhood Foundation, and thanks again for joining us, Warwick.
All the best. Thank you.
And that's another show, Dads on the Air. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can download this show on www.dadsontheair.net. Have a safe, happy week. Enjoy your Father's Day, and we'll see you all next week. We're dads on the air. We're dads.